Hello and welcome to D2C Podcast. I'm Eric Dick. Today we're talking customer support with a brand leader who supported a lot of customers, potentially the most customers of any D2C apparel brand in the past 5 years. We're talking True Classic, the t-shirt giant who reported $250 million over their first 4 years last year. Today, Brianna Moreno, customer support maverick and VP of CX at True Classic, gives us the breakdown of the system she's built to support the incredibly fast-paced growth that they've experienced there while actively turning her division into a profit center. Brianna is a True Classic herself and literally the company's first official hire beyond the founders, so she's been there for the whole wild ride. Listen in and you'll get Brianna's insights on support as a sales channel for upselling and cross-selling, how to harness support data and interactions to fuel effective marketing and product development, as well as how and why you should be integrating your support with your customer retention and loyalty programs. I hope you enjoy this one. On with the show.
I decided to really challenge myself on how can we leverage AI? How can we get to understand it better? Is this a tool that's going to work? Where is this going to take us? We implemented an AI help desk solution last year. We saw phenomenal results, both from an acquisition standpoint and a retention standpoint. We're seeing like conversion just significantly increase. I think we saw over $3 million in increased revenue just from our support team. Everybody in the CX space knows Q4 is generally when you're going to have to staff up, right? You're going to have to bring in extra resources. You're generally going to have a backlog, meaning you're not burning through your tickets as much. It's going to take you longer. And we saw none of that.
Content from real people equals instant credibility for your brand. Consumers today crave real connections with real people, and they're guarded about who they'll trust. Highly polished, branded content simply doesn't cut it anymore. Let MiniSocial build a network of powerful micro-influencers around your brand who all know and love your products. They'll create something compelling that resonates with their audience and deliver it directly to you for use across all your marketing channels. Yeah, that includes ads. Meet millennials and Gen Zers where they're already hanging out, in the feeds of their favorite influencers, and get started with MiniSocial. Brianna, welcome to the D2C podcast. I am really happy to have you here. Can you start us off by giving us a little bit of a rundown of your hero's journey and how you became where you're at today?
Yeah, it's not really exciting. I wish I had some amazing story to tell, but I don't. I got actually into the new home building industry while I was still in college, worked in corporate America. I was really young, so it took twice the amount of everybody else for me to really create a name and stake for myself. During the market crash in 2009, I was presented an opportunity and I was so grateful. As we consolidated the business, I was able to work with one of my mentors that I had just absolutely admired for so long and really learned the value of getting more done with less. And I think that's what stuck with me to this day. I stayed in the new home building industry probably a good 12 to 14 years. When I was pregnant with my third child, the company relocated, and I was just not willing to have three young kids in daycare and a really hefty commute. So I decided to try the stay-at-home mom thing, which I proved to not be very well at because I kind of loved that aspect of me time and really the challenge of work and all of that. So I decided to look at what I could do from home. And I was a consumer of a product called Chatbooks. They're automated photo books and loved journaling. So it kind of went hand in hand. And I started to work in their customer support team. Quickly scaled with them. Obviously, I was probably a little bit overqualified. But again, it was just fun. And I was looking for challenge. And I was working with one of the co-founders on potentially moving over into coding because, again, I just thrive on challenge and I want to continue to grow. And I was presented by the CEOs and told that they had a friend of theirs in the business that was looking for somebody to grow and scale their CX team. And from there, I moved over to Freshly Picked, built and scaled their CX team, had an amazing time building that company. And then Nick Ventura from True Classic found me, I think probably on LinkedIn or something, and connected with them, and then inevitably made the choice to leap over to True Classic and work with the guys hand in hand on building CX for them. So fun fact is I was actually employee number one at True Classic.
Oh, wow. What are they at approximately now? What are you at approximately now as a whole organization?
Oh my gosh, we're well over 50, probably I would say 75 maybe. I don't know. We just had another hiring span. Fun fact again, this week we're doing our company all hands. We do our QBR meeting. So I'm actually going into the office tomorrow. We have some of our international team visiting. So it's always so fun to get FaceTime. But yeah, we've got to be, I would say between 60 to 70 now maybe.
Very cool. On this podcast, we talk all the time about, you know, we're an agency, and so we talk about ads a lot. We talk about growth a lot. When I reached out to you about coming on the podcast, you were really eager to speak about customer support, about CX. What do you feel about like today's e-commerce climate and how hyper-relevant CX is versus maybe things like ads and growth specifically today?
Such a good question. I think inevitably so much of our industry is focused on marketing and initiatives of acquisition, right? Retention. But at the end of the day, I always find value in that first touch point with the brand, that human touch point, that human element, which is generally the support team. It's something that I'm super passionate about and very proud of because we really have the ability to sway that consumer from, you know, converting or from staying when something goes wrong, right? So whether it be like in our world, maybe they need help with sizing, or in previous worlds, you know, we would help with pairing of product whether, you know, we're working on a mom brand or a kids brand and you yourself are a mom, you can obviously give really good insights on styling or experience and really the ability to connect with your consumer, I think is what sets CX apart.
Love it. I think marketing's job is often to kind of get that first purchase in a lot of ways, but what's so important for brands to thrive and for brands to grow the way that True Classic has, you need to be optimizing down the line to the second, third, fourth purchase. I am a ongoing purchaser of True Classic. It's funny, my duplex neighbor beside me, I'm constantly seeing True Classic packages coming to his house. So you're doing a good job of getting people to make more than one purchase in an ongoing fashion, which is probably just absolutely critical to your meteoric growth that you've had.
Yes, yes. And that is, again, I think with ads, you see so often people are like, is there a real company behind this? Is this a shell company? I don't know if you've purchased from companies before and you like never get your product shipped. I'm part of that. I get it. I understand. And I think that's where the support team can really make a difference. It's not just about, you know, the support team on the other end that's working to try to get somebody to convert, right? Or maybe they're working to mitigate something that went wrong. But at the end of the day, it's about that human element, which I think is why I love leveraging our support, that feedback, the data insights that they get. Generally, 99% of the time, our support team is going to know whether something is a good idea or not, because they just know our consumers better than anybody. I mean, they're talking to them day in and day out. So I think, again, that's just something that I'm so proud of, is it's not just about what we're selling at True Classic, but more about the community that we're building, and we're more than willing to work to earn trust, because we understand in the e-com space, either there's a ton of other, you know, people in the market, it's saturated, but there has to be a reason why you're purchasing from a brand and to come back and time again. We may get influenced, right? And like, oh, okay, I'm going to get this because I saw it on whatever. But then there's a different element to actually connecting with the brand. And that's something that I'm so proud of what we've built here. And certainly makes it easier when you have founders that are definitely just as passionate about giving back, about creating a sense of community, about doing the right thing, even, you know, in an instance where maybe the customer clicked the wrong thing. Like, it doesn't matter. We're going to fix it no matter what, because we want you to trust us and we want you to feel that, you know, this is an inclusive space for you. So excited that your neighbor knows about us and is continuously purchasing from us. That's such an honor.
And it's also, you know, to bring it to ads as well, which is where my mind always goes, a lot of the best advertising and is so often informed by that human side of things. Like, you can learn so much about the angles that you're talking about in your ads or you're sending in your emails from these human interactions that you have on the support side. Do you guys do I imagine you do, but you do a good job connecting those, you know, those instances that happen one-to-one with customer support through back to the whole marketing funnel?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I can't tell you how many times like we've taken actual feedback from our consumers and use that in paid or just any type of marketing leverage, because it's like, look, this is real life. And I think that's such a huge aspect of earning trust, right? And showing that you're a real company and there's real people behind that. But yeah, we have a membership group in Facebook, and this has just been so fun getting to know them more so on like a personal level and getting in there and just engaging with them. But we have some really great stories of people coming to us and sharing their story or their experience with True Classic. That's kind of like over the top that we've asked, like, hey, we would love to use this in a campaign, or we'd love to share your feedback. That's always fun. And it really connects us with them just as much as them with us, kind of thing.
Very cool. What does your team look like at this point? When I've talked to CX leaders in the past, we're really having a moment right now with AI and the tools that are available on the support side of things. So talk about what your team looks like, and whether has it been getting bigger? Is it getting smaller with AI? And then how do you view the AI as a tool in this process?
Such a good question. I think AI is a buzzword. We've seen it since last year. That's actually when I decided to really challenge myself on how can we leverage AI? How can we get to understand it better? You know, is this a tool that's going to work? Where is this going to take us? I met such amazing brands that are actually leading AI and that have been like building it and leading it for years prior to us even pulling our stuff together to even look at it. But yeah, we implemented an AI help desk solution last year. We saw phenomenal results, like amazing, both from an acquisition standpoint and a retention standpoint. We're seeing like conversion just significantly increase. I think they did a case study and it was, you know, we saw over 3 million in increased revenue just from our support team. It was amazing to see. And I think, again, everybody in the CX space knows Q4 is generally when you're going to have to staff up, right? You're going to have to bring in extra resources. You're generally going to have a backlog, meaning you're not burning through your tickets as much. It's going to take you longer. And we saw none of that this year. We scaled down in our support team quite significantly. Obviously, we cut costs, which was really interesting. But leveraging these automation tools, it's really cool because a lot of them won't charge you unless they fully automate. So that's really interesting. And I learned so much in the difference between automation and true AI, where it's coming in and solving the problem either partially, which cut down, you know, your resolution times, or it's fully deflecting, meaning, you know, customers' email or chat never even touched a live agent. It was just living with AI the whole time. And still, one of the things that was so important to me was I didn't want to sacrifice CSAT for that. So allowing us to still measure like a 94% CSAT across deflection, again, no agents involved, to me was a win. I am willing to assume the risk on such a small percentage if, again, the costs and the benefits are so much greater. And we saw this again, even like through our returns portal, post-purchase, like being able to leverage AI there. For our previous, we were with a previous vendor, having challenges from a global perspective, AI really came in, helped us solve for that. So a strong proponent, definitely of the mindset that it doesn't get it right all the time, which neither do humans. But it really did shift my mindset. Even using AI on phones was something just mind-blowing, again, to see the decrease in costs and increase in customer experience. It really proves the point of people are responding really well to this if you do it right. And that's what we're challenging ourselves with, is making sure we're doing it right. We're not adding frustration, but we are leveraging the tools that are out there. And then to follow up with that, because it's freed up so much of our agent time, that then allows them to have more impactful conversation we could do proactive messaging with a live agent, you know, from like a stylist perspective, a marketing perspective, having live conversation and engagement, or, you know, troubleshooting whatever type of issues you're running into. It allows them to be more intentional in those instead of having to move so quickly to solve for everything.
And then practically with AI, when the customer is engaging it, are they in your system, are they aware? Are you sort of like, hi, I'm an AI bot here to help you? Or is it all sort of like one seamless process? How do you go about identifying what's AI and what's not?
Yeah, it's one. I don't want people to know that it's AI off the bat. Most of them do in the current state we're in right now. A ton of testing last year that we're doing to really understand how are people responding to it. But I don't want to come out and say, hey, we're a bot, because I think it just automatically puts up a guard. So we're testing. We're testing so many different aspects of it. Obviously, from a generative AI perspective, we're using Zowie so in their solution. So it's less risk than like an OpenAI that's just God only knows what it's going to say.
Hallucinating. Yeah.
I trust in their offer, their system. They've, like I said, been building this for years. But again, we're testing, seeing what works, seeing what consumers respond to. And again, there's so much. I don't think people realize how much effort is put into training an AI. That to me, this may be an automated response, but it's not 100% without a human. We are absolutely teaching it, enabling it, monitoring it, growing it. So there's so much effort put into the AI that I don't want people to think this is just a bot. It really is a personality, and we're working on building that right now. So I kind of leave it up. And there's generally a handoff, and you don't really know, like, is this a human or not? And that's the element of surprise that I want to keep, because it doesn't matter whether it's a bot or a human. We need to solve your problem as quickly and as painlessly as we can. And that's the goal.
And ideally, you want to create a web experience that is so clear or so intuitive that you don't even get to that point where support is necessary. You want your marketing message and your product to be so aligned that you know, the best customer support is what you don't even hear about because they solved it all themselves, I guess, right?
Yeah, true. Like proactive messaging, of course, setting expectations, you know, those post-purchase flows. We've seen such an increase in that and making more intentional interactions. Again, like I said, with our global markets, you know, we're missing the beat there and setting expectation. And you're right. If you do not set clear expectation, then it's going to lead to friction. It's going to lead to people popping over and saying, what the heck's going on with my order? You know, it's been X amount of time. We know people don't read. So it is such an art to try to set clear expectation on your website, making sure that you're giving them as much insight as possible without overloading them. But 100%, that is always the goal. And we've seen a significant decrease in our ticket to order ratio by, just like you said, proactively solving something before it becomes an issue.
You mentioned CSAT, and I love new acronyms. I can add a new acronym every time I do a podcast. That's a big win. Customer satisfaction. How do you actually measure customer satisfaction practically?
So everybody that we talk to on every channel is given a CSAT request. So we send them a survey that just says, hey, how would you rate the interaction you had with your support agent? And that is where they'll give like a 1 to 5 star rating, and then they can leave comments. Again, we do the same thing, even if it's automated or with a live agent, because I want to know from that consumer, not just how would you rate it, but is there feedback? Is there somewhere that we fell short? Is there something we need to improve? We do this on the phone lines too that are also automated. So again, any feedback, my perception is any feedback is good feedback, positive or negative, obviously, to help us increase. But the good news is we run about a 98% collective CSAT, which is freaking amazing. Amazing in our industry and something that I'm so proud of.
Super cool. And you mentioned it earlier, just being able to isolate the fact that I think you said 3 million of additional sales kind of made through this customer support channel. Talk you know, everyone, the buzzword on the marketing side is profitable marketing. And we used to call it performance marketing. The big buzzword these days is just really making sure that you're profitable from your first dollar spent in marketing. If you can talk about profitable customer support and how you measure that and how, like, cause I know there's all sorts of, there's tools, there's sort of like sales concierges that you mentioned, stylists, mm-hmm. where you've got that ability to say, hey, you might like this pants with this shirt kind of thing. Yep. Talk about how you think about profitable customer support.
Yeah, I look at, I mean, our conversion alone, you know, we put, every company out there puts so much money and effort to their site, right? You want it to perform, you want it to convert. But the reality is, if you look at your site conversion compared to your support conversion, you're going to see a vast difference in there, which is great, because if you did not have that support team, imagine how much lower your site conversion would be. So we look at a ton of things, but one of them is our conversion. How valuable are we as support agents to be able to either convert first-time customers, returning customers, or retain customers after something's gone wrong? Let's say there was a mishap with their delivery, right? They could essentially kind of lose trust on us and be a little leery and upset. So it's up to us to make sure we're utilizing all of our trained skills to ensure that customer is coming back time and time again. And we have significant impact there as well. So we look at, from a cost perspective, I look at like a cost per ticket, which we break down by all of our hard costs. And then I don't even take into account that revenue. But I could tell you, it's a no-brainer. It's so easy to see how low our cost per ticket is. And that's essentially saying we are beyond efficient. We're beyond efficient, which means we can automate a significant amount of tickets and then leverage our team to then sell to these consumers or fix problems with these consumers that are going to result in them coming back time and time again. All of that we're doing so efficiently that we have such a low cost per ticket. I talk to many vendors who don't believe me on it, and I have to show them our cost per ticket is like staggeringly low. And that comes from a process standpoint. You have to be good. You have to know your costs in order to kind of fall that low. But at the end of the day, for our team, I'm really giving them a platform to show their value. And that's how we're doing it across CSAT, across our cost per ticket, across our LTV. We're generating like a 34% higher LTV than just customers that don't correspond with support. So that's, again, we have a higher conversion rate. We're at like a 14% conversion rate versus our site conversion rate. We have a higher LTV, which means these consumers are spending more after conversing with our support team. And mind you, these are very like low windows. We're looking at 72 hours. That's what we're capturing. But again, these are all aspects of value that are driven by a support team, which I think often goes unnoticed, right? Like, people just tend to look at it as a cost center. It's just a necessity, an operational need, an operational cost. But the reality is, if you're doing it well, it can mean more profit than anything you've ever seen before.
And you're doing all of this innovation on the support side amidst one of the like the fastest growing like apparel brands in the world, I think. You know, you're reducing your team size, which is pretty crazy. But to do all of this amidst like the incredible growth trajectory that True Classic has had, it's got to be pretty breakneck. Like, talk a little bit about that experience of sort of innovating within such a crazy high growth environment.
You know, it really starts with the team. It really starts with like that foundational build of like, look, here's where we're going. Some of the girls had followed me from brands prior. And that's kind of like the conversation that we had initially right off the bat is, this is going to be a wild ride. This company has the ability to just soar and we get to be part of it. So the sky's the limit. And these team players are so insanely good at what they do that they're not afraid. They're not afraid to take the risk. They're not afraid to take the leap. We're all in it together. We support each other. When challenges arise, like we have each other to bounce ideas off of. But at the end of the day, we look back at the things that we just can't even fathom and we're already here, right? And it's like going on year four for me and I still have the same team. So like, yes, support has scaled, but our internal team that kind of does all the back-end process builds and managing of the day-to-day is still the same size as when we started back in 2020, which is mind-blowing.
And then can you share any insights for how you've kind of kept that team really motivated and, you know, driven to succeed? And just to, I imagine it's a department that quite often would have a fair amount of turnover. It sounds like you've had very little. Talk a little bit about how you built this team out and how you incentivize and inspire people.
Yeah, I think that's a great word, is inspire people. Like I said, the sky's the limit, right? So my goal as a leader here in the industry is to help everybody get to that next level of where they're headed and where they want to go. Really trying to empower people to be thoughtful, forward thinkers, right? We want to be thought leaders in our industry, in our space. We want to constantly be 3, 4, or 5 steps ahead because, again, from a support perspective, we always have to be fluid, right? We always have to be agile. We're going to be cleaning up problems that we didn't necessarily create. But at the end of the day, like, you can't stop and complain about it. You can't stop and be fearful of it. We have to adapt. We have to already have a solution before a problem arises. And I think having that mentality and having that space enables you to accept that throughout the entire organization. So as the organization grows and scales at a rapid pace, it's easy for us to adapt. It's easy for us to be agile because we're already accustomed to that. It's like in our blood. And I think, again, how you get to that space is making sure that you have a platform for people to give feedback. You know, you have these working sessions where you're kind of bouncing off ideas off of each other. You're being mindful of the industry and what's happening and what's changing. You're sort of defensive over what you've accomplished and the partnerships that you've built because you've put so much heart and soul into it. And I think you're only able to achieve that with a really strong team. I have this analogy that I used to do when I would do team calls, but it's like we're all in a boat rowing, right? And we all have to be, I mean, if you've ever seen rowing, it's like a freaking art where they're just rowing, like, and you think, how the hell somebody messes up and that boat's, you know, going to soar left. And I tell the team, like, we all have to do our part in rowing. And the minute somebody stops, you're dragging us down or you're deflecting our direction of where we're going. And so I think, again, collectively, we have such a great culture. We have such great relationships. We've built this together that everybody literally does this rowing seamlessly. And it really is magic.
So that's the human side. And then from the technical side, growing as fast as you have, can you give an example of how you've kind of leveraged customized solutions to help True Classic's customer support needs?
This is my favorite thing ever. And I'm so passionate about this. And sometimes people laugh at me and they're like, are you on their payroll? And I'm like, no, but this is a big freaking deal because we've all worked so hard to make solutions that are not out there. And so when you finally get to like check that box, you're like hella excited. So we leverage these partnerships and we build really strong relationships with them. And they in turn support us, right? And they make these amazing builds to solve for problems that we're facing as a brand, which I think more people in our industry need to think about. Like, the out-of-the-box solution is great for so-and-so, but what about you? What about your business? And we saw this so much so when we expanded internationally. People just were not supporting the international side. So really partnering with amazing vendors that are solving a need for us with a custom build allows us to do things that are just not on the market. Like, again, the AI automation we're doing with Zowie, the integrations that they've built, the fact that my support team never once pops out of their help desk is unheard of. I mean, you could talk to brands and they're like, yeah, 30 to 40% of the agent's time is spent popping into various different solutions. And we solved for that because I knew it was going to drive down costs. It was going to drive up efficiencies. You know, we partnered with Parcel Lab last year to build an AI solution for an estimated delivery date that's like not a guarantee. But again, like we talked about earlier, setting that expectation, giving people clear expectation. We couldn't solve that with these other vendors, and they came up with a solution. We built an amazing return platform with them. They built a custom solution for us with quality issues. So this automates it for the support agent where they're not having to do replacement orders. It's all automated. drills down into the data so specific that we can then offset, you know, potential credits or issues with manufacturing or with fulfillment. Like, again, just these custom solutions that make your life so much easier and limit your cost, that's value, that's profitability. And at the same time, now we're helping these vendors build a better solution that they can in turn offer to the rest of the industry. So it's a win-win for everybody, for sure.
I imagine, yeah, it's like when you guys are a big dog, basically, and you're able to go into these situations, I bet it's a challenge at times for these brands to build up custom solutions, but they end up much better for it on the other side because they've sort of had everything sort of trialed by fire in the true classic experience.
Yes, yes. And working, like, oftentimes they'll bring in like the CTO or co-founders because they want to learn. They want to learn what's in our brain, what we're thinking, because that allows them to build a better solution for their customers.
I'm actually going to do a podcast with your VP marketing, I think, coming up soon. And I remember, like, just the, you know, all brands in 2024 have to have a really strong narrative or a really strong story in order to connect through and build that great brand. And I remember, you know, just the essential story of a true classic going into a pretty fairly commoditized space or a very competitive space of apparel. And just to be able to have this narrative of like, okay, our shirts fit you better. Our shirts fit better around the arms, around the waist. What's the importance of having that story through to the customer support side? I guess you just really need to be able to deliver and make sure that your agents and that your AI is sort of echoing the story that's kind of delivered on the front end.
That's such a good perspective, is like people really need to make sure that they align on their brand guidelines, right? That brand tone, the brand persona, because that's going to create cohesiveness throughout every touch point, which I think we're really good. So whether you talk to somebody online, you get an email from us, or you visit one of our retail locations, we want that experience to all be cohesive with our brand tone. And you get our vibe. You'll see this a lot, like in our ads. We love to tap into humor because humor just makes everybody feel good. And that's, again, started with Ryan, our CEO. It really resonates with him. He does things like this all the time. Like earlier this year, it was, you know, doing the teacher's wish lists. We're constantly looking for surprise and delight moments with our actual customers or just people in general. So it starts there, where it's a real human perspective. We make fun of ourselves sometimes, but it's all in good fun. And I think that's what sets us apart. People know our name. It was amazing in Vegas last week, just how many people were like, oh my gosh, True Classic. Oh, I love your tees. And just random conversations. If my son had some friends over this weekend, and one of the kids was telling my husband that him and his dad are huge True Classic fans. And it's just funny because it's like, wow, they know our brand. And it's like, you put so much effort and care and intention into it. So when you see or hear these stories on the flip side, it really is so kind of like humbling and knowing like, okay, we're doing a good job. It's like when your kids behave at their friend's house and the mom tells you, oh my gosh, your kid's such an angel. And you're like, thank God they were an angel. Right? You're like, okay.
They save their best for when they're outside the house usually, right?
I'll take it. Yeah, I'll take it.
You guys innovate across every... We were just talking about Shop Talk, and I mean, the last conference I was at where True Classic was there, you have your poker chips. These poker chips with, you know, product. And even when it comes to your appearances at trade shows, you're innovating for surprise and delight. And I bet I saw Ryan posting on LinkedIn with his, you know, a big handful of these poker chips. Yep. I bet you probably had a bunch of people kind of coming up to you just looking for that innovation.
Yeah, I never did get to connect with him. I was going to steal some and I would have like dropped him off of a balcony. But I did bring my own, and it was so awesome because there was hardly anybody I had talked to that hadn't already known about our brand and were actively purchasing. We have this guy from Parcel Lab who, no clue, never met him before, but he's actually in our membership group and giving us valuable feedback on the product and telling us how much he loves it. And so getting to see them face to face, it's so fun. But Ryan originally designed those poker chips for Poker Go. I think it was a promotion we had done. He obviously is a, you know, ex-professional poker player. So it was so fitting. I brought them last year to Shop Talk because I thought this makes such perfect sense. And then got some more this year. And I know I'm sure Ryan gave a ton out, but definitely just wanting to, like you said, you know, sprinkle some surprise and delight everywhere we go.
Any other takeaway? I haven't been to Shop Talk. I'm going to make it a priority to, I think, get there next year. Any big takeaways from this year at Shop Talk?
You know, I think the big takeaway was just community, seeing everybody come together and innovate on things that, you know, we haven't seen in our industry. It's really a sense of community and learning, kind of like educating ourselves on, you know, different aspects of the business or the industry that maybe we don't have all the insights for. But seeing everybody come together was probably one of the best things ever. They definitely know how to party. These people are a good time. I could not keep up with them. Definitely make sure you get your rest before, because it is exhausting. It's very overwhelming. The size, I heard it's supposed to be even bigger next year, which I have no clue how they're going to strategically pull that off. But so next year will definitely be a good year for you to test it out. But just, you know, load up on your vitamins beforehand and go into it very open-minded. It's hard to do it all. You cannot do it all. You cannot see it all. But you will have these really cool moments where you just connect with community, and that's what makes it worth it.
What was your mission kind of going into it? Was it really just to kind of connect with your fans, connect with other people in the industry who support, or did you have specific sort of objectives to what you wanted to do at Shop Talk?
No, I went into it, you know, going in and supporting the vendors that I work with, Zowie and Parcel, being there as a leverage for them to just share my story with fellow merchants out there that may or may not be going across the same challenges. So I really didn't have any expectations, but what I got from it was meeting people that have been following my journey unbeknownst to me, being able to just connect with them and have a conversation, and it being so impactful to them is so humbling to me. Like, I'm just a person. I'm just doing what I do. And the fact that, you know, encourages other people is such a blessing and an honor. And it was such an amazing opportunity to connect with them and to sit down and have lunch. And I'm an open book, so I share ideas and again, thoughts, forward-thinking ideas and suggestions. And I think that resonates with people. It's hard in my space to find. I didn't have a predecessor. I didn't learn from anybody. I'm really self-taught, trial and error. And so trying to be that for somebody else makes it all worth it for myself personally.
You mentioned going global, and I think True Classic is probably going global in a way that a lot of the brands I haven't touched or I've talked to haven't kind of begun to tackle. What does your global like approach look like? Is it truly what are your biggest markets outside of North America, I would say?
Yeah, North America is one of them. Australia, New Zealand, Europe, those are strong ones. We're seeing Mexico surprisingly really well, performing really well in volume. Obviously, we went big, like True Classic. We said, let's test them all. Let's see who responds. We opened some local fulfillment centers at the Q4 of last year, which again is unheard of. We've recently just scaled our international team. So we've got some amazing players that are helping us just really dive in and perfect that whole aspect of the business, and we're seeing the benefits and the growth on that side. This is something for me personally that I'm really excited about, is just working to understand global markets and what is the expectation by region of shopping for them, and you know, what are the expectations that they predict that they'll have with a brand, and then I want to come in and obviously exceed those expectations. And so I'm looking forward to doing that this year, really diving into the international consumer side of things and better understanding that. So again, we can be wherever they need us to be, and we can earn that trust and build community.
Is this all happening in English, or does your site translate into Spanish and any other place that you might be tackling?
Yeah, we do have some local language translation on our site. So whether it be France, or we haven't yet gone to Spanish, but we're working on it. But yes, we do have translated sites already very well underway. And then again, if you happen to converse with the support side, that's all translated, automated as well.
I just feel like we're in a in a renaissance of Americana is whether it's latent right now. I think it'll be coming in the next few years. And I feel like there's nothing more American than the white t-shirt with a pair of jeans. So I feel like there's just a huge True. Opportunity to kind of grow the brand internationally on the back of a renaissance of Americana.
Yes. Yes. And to see kind of like, you know, what do they love the most? And it is interesting kind of to see the similarities, like, you know, our staple six pack is a favorite for everybody, but yeah, it's, we are not just a US business anymore by any means. Like we are 100% global, both from our team perspective and just everything in between. And it really is exciting to watch.
You mentioned not having, you know, that you're kind of figuring this out as you go as a CX leader and advocate. If anyone is listening in the podcast who wants to kind of innovate like you have in CX, where would you recommend they kind of follow your journey or potentially even reach out?
Yeah, they can definitely reach out to me. I've done so many different mentorship kind of consultations with different merchants out there and just organic conversation. Definitely get a hold of me. Probably LinkedIn's the easiest way to track me down. And yeah, I know. I wish there was a book that I could put it all in, because there's so much to kind of put, you know, pen to paper and really like a checklist. But happy to be a resource for anybody out there that's going through challenges or just want to learn more. It's definitely exciting.
All right. Well, I await your book because I think you definitely could write one. I think that's a great idea. But yeah, thanks so much for coming on the podcast today, Brianna. This is great.
Thank you. Such an honor. So much fun. And maybe I'll be back someday again with my book.
We will catch up and I will see you at Chop Talk, if not before. And I'll be prepared with my vitamins, as you say.
Yes. Get plenty of rest again. Before.